his compassion, we see his wit, we see his ability to inform and engage others. And so, you know, what we find is that Malcolm studied the dictionary not so that he could learn how to read and write, but he studied the dictionary so he could learn the etymology, the root words, so he could be his best. And when we look at today, the criminal justice system, we know that there are over 3 million people behind bars, that the U.S. spent in 2012 $80 billion taxpayer dollars on correction facilities, not education, not after-school programs. And so the incarcerated population has increased by 700%, and we wanted to focus on the humanity of these people behind bars.
And of course, you dedicate the book to the incarcerated. Ilyasa Shahbaz, I want to thank you so much for being with us. The book is called The Awakening of Malcolm X. I'm Amy Goodman. Wear a mask. Stay safe.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO is hiring a membership director. Our membership director maintains relationships with KBOO members and listeners, create a process to meet or exceed fundraising goals, and manage the membership database. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Apply by March 15th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's Friday. Stay tuned. Mind the gap, because we're going to bridge it.
Portland and the world. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I am Tammy, and this is The Gap. On the line with me is my lovely, fantastic, jubilant, radiant co-host, Althea Billing. How are you doing, Althea?
Nice. Oh, I am raised up by your wonderful adjectives. I was feeling tired, but you said I'm jubilant, so I better be. How are you doing?
I am exceptionally tired. It's been a very long month, going on week, or was it month 15 of 2020? So, you know, kind of chugging along, but doing the thing.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. We also have the lovely and energetic Sonia. Hello, Sonia. Thank you so much.
Good morning. We all need a good hype person to, like, you know, it's not just pumping up the crowd, it's pumping up us for the crowd, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if Beyonce can't get us pumped up, then we really have another thing coming. We've got bigger problems than we thought.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, gotta ride this energy as far as it'll take me. That's what I always think when I get any kind of motivation or excitement. Better make the most of it.
Do you ever get, like, the burst of energy at really late hours of the night?
Yeah. Like, and it's like, well, I guess I have to scrub my bathtub. I guess there isn't a way around it.
And then because it's like too late, and being that I identify as a woman, I'm just scared to walk around at nighttime because, you know, we live in a society that sometimes does bad things to people who identify as women. So I don't go on a walk, which I always want to do because it's so quiet and it seems like the perfect time to go on a walk when I get those random bursts of energy at 1 a.m. But scrubbing the bathtub, I'll think about doing that next time.
You know, Ken Wilber would say that that energy is an unrecognized and unacknowledged desire or drive to scrub the bathtub, manifesting.
Good. It better manifest at 1 a.m. because it's not happening at 1 p.m.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, you know, I've later into the evening, I've let my guard down about how I don't want to scrub the bathtub.
Exactly.
And so the latent urge can grip me and say, you better get in there with a scrub brush.
You're not devoting as much.
You know that you haven't done it in a while.
You're not devoting as much energy to resisting or hiding from or pushing it into the shadow realm, see?
Yeah,
I like
the shadow realm of not doing chores.
Well,
the shadow of
put into that.
Mm-hmm. It's the Jungian idea of the shadow, like that part, that section of the ego that we don't wish to acknowledge, and so we divide ego into the parts, into a persona and a shadow. The parts that we do acknowledge publicly and present to the world, and those that we don't, and we try to hide from the world and consequently from ourselves as well.
This is what they call shadow work, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Light work
I'm
and
a
shadow
bit
work. KVOO Portland. So that's
nice.
A really interesting thing. I hope that we're able to talk about this with like a professional of some sort, because I'm sure we put a lot of energy into remembering to forget something, you know? And I'd really love to explore that a little bit and ways we can, you know, set ourselves up for success and have the tools to be able to not do that so that it doesn't, like Sonia said, manifest at 1 o'clock in the morning and you end up scrubbing your bathtub because you've been putting it off for a month.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll fully put stuff off that is like, oh, it's not that important, I don't have to do it right this second, and then I have a stress dream and wake up and realize that I've been neglecting it for a week. Like, okay. Put it on the schedule.
See, and that's unacknowledged drive. And so this fellow I'm talking about, Ken Wilber, W-I-L-B-E-R, in a book called No Boundary, and it's from the mid-70s, I think. It talks about how when we feel pressure to do something, it may or may not be coming from others. Instead of or in addition to that external pressure, we might also be an unacknowledged drive that's manifesting as a feeling of pressure.
I like that a lot. I like that. You know, they say know thyself and to thine ultra self be true. I think it's somewhere in some book somewhere.
Well, that's part of Claudius's smarmy little lecture to Laertes in Hamlet, just before Laertes sets off to go back to school in France. It's a neither a bar nor a lender be, that kind of thing. For in lending, the friend and what is lent are both lost, and that borrowing dulls the edge of husbandry. Meaning the wise and judicious managing of resources.
Well, that's actually, speaking of which, that's a great pivot, managing of resources. Thank you for that, Sonia. For our show today. Appreciate it. Great pivoting. In our program today, we are, per usual, starting with a part one and going shimmying over to a part two. For the beginning, right now, we're going to be talking about some of the current administration's strides and activities within the last week, because a lot of things are happening, and actually Congress is still voting on the stimulus or the COVID relief bill currently right now. You can check it out online. It is available. But we do have a piece of audio which kind of highlights three of the things that we've chosen to talk about for our first segment, which includes the Equality Act, which was passed with flying colors. I'm doing like a invisible clap, as well as the erection of a new detention center for immigrant children, and lastly, the $15 an hour. The struggle for the $15 an hour fight, which unfortunately will not be being voted on with the Congress this morning, because it has been completely cut out. But we do have a little bit of audio talking about it, and we'll be back in a couple of moments. And here it is.
Oh, stand by, folks. Our media player isn't playing the correct audio. Just sit tight for a second. Tammy, Althea?
Yes. That is true. The media player sometimes don't work, but you're on it, fixing it, and just really stoked about the good news. Not very excited about the action of a new detention center, but I do trust that our grassroots organizers and organizations will have something to say. And actually, that piece of audio is from someone who works at the detention center, and well, she makes a really, really interesting point about just because you put in a soccer field doesn't make it not a detention center. She had a really interesting way of looking at it and putting it. So I was really excited to share that audio with everyone, with the listeners this morning. So now are we good to go?
I believe so.
Did you know? Here we are. Thank you so much. We'll be back in a couple of moments.
Their lives on Sunday and risk being fired for it on Monday.
That's right. In more than 30 states, LGBTQ people are still at risk of being fired, evicted, or denied services because of who they are.
That's because LGBTQ people still aren't fully covered by our nation's civil rights laws. And that's why we need the Equality Act, which adds LGBTQ people to existing law that protects women, communities of color, and people of faith.
If it seems like a no-brainer,
that's because it is. More than 7 in 10 Americans support the Equality Act.
That's not just LGBTQ Americans.
That's 7 in 10 of all Americans.
All Americans.
And more than 90 major American companies have already endorsed it.
Tell Congress
and Donald Trump
it's time for the Equality Act.
Because we deserve full federal equality.
And nothing less.
It takes a momentous step towards full equality that brings our nation closer to the founding promise of liberty and justice for all, enshrined in the preamble of our Constitution by our founders in their great wisdom, also in our pledge to the flag. And it is sadly necessary. I wish that it weren't. Sometimes I just wonder why it is. But it is sadly necessary because many members of the national LGBTQ community live in states where, though they have the right to marry, they have no state-level non-discrimination protections in other areas of life.
On this vote, the yeas are 224 and the nays are 206. The bill is passed.
In America today, and one of the great scandals of our economy, is that nearly half of all workers make less than $15 an hour. And they are forced to rely on public assistance programs costing taxpayers $107 billion each year. Today we're going to be discussing about what it means to work for a large corporation that makes billions of dollars in profit, but yet as a worker, you're not sure when you wake up in the morning if you're going to have enough food to feed your kids. I am also sympathetic to providing small businesses with the tax relief that they need to offset some of the increased labor costs associated with the minimum wage increase, just as Congress has done virtually every time that it has increased the minimum wage.
And the House getting ready to pass President Biden's nearly $2 trillion COVID relief bill.
But the attempt to include a new $15 minimum wage suffered a setback overnight. Congressional correspondent Rachel Scott has the latest on where things stand. Good morning, Rachel.
George, good morning. And the headline here is that $15 an hour minimum wage increase will likely not be included in the final version of this COVID relief package. The House is still on track to pass a version of this bill today, but overnight in the Senate, a setback. Democrats have laid the groundwork to be able to pass this bill on their own without any Republican support, but that does come with limitations. And so in the Senate, you had this policy ruling saying that that $15 an hour minimum wage increase cannot be included in their version of the bill. The White House says President Joe Biden is disappointed by this. He is urging Congress to act and pass this bill quickly. It will likely make it easier for the Senate to pass this bill. You had two moderate Senate Democrats who were opposed to that minimum wage increase. But lawmakers here are up against a deadline. On March 14th, unemployment benefits for millions of Americans expire. They want to get this bill on President Joe Biden's desk before then. So this would extend those unemployment benefits. It would also include $1,400 in stimulus checks to most Americans, $350 billion in aid to state and local government, plus billions more for vaccine distribution, COVID testing, and grants for schools. Now, Republicans still opposed to that $1.9 trillion price tag, George. They want more targeted relief.
The detention of migrant children at the U.S. border was one of the most infamous policies of the Trump administration. The president might have changed, but this problem isn't going away as the flow of undocumented immigrants is on the rise.
There has been an increase over the last couple of months, but what that means and whether that's related to the situation south of the border or the situation north of the border, we'll get more information on that in the next couple of months.
Linda Brand Miller is an immigration attorney based near Carrizo Springs in Texas, the site of a new temporary shelter for migrant children.
This issue started under the Obama administration and then transitioned through Trump and is now back in Biden. It's still a smiley face on detention for children. So the fact that there's a soccer field at Carrizo Springs does not make this any better than kids in cages.
For the private sector, running shelters like Carrizo Springs, these government contracts can be lucrative due to the lengthy delays with family reunification.
The problem is that there is a program designed for the care and custody of these children. That's the program that the Biden administration needs to fix so that it is more streamlined, so that children can be safely reunified in a timely manner, and there is then no need to spend the billions of dollars that we the people are paying for these makeshift facilities to temporarily house children.
A controversy that will have all sides on the immigration issue debating for many months to come.
Thank you so much. And that was a couple of pieces of audio from CNBC. There was a piece of Bloomberg there as well, just kind of highlighting what's been happening in the last week, honestly, the last few days with the Biden administration. We started off with hearing about the Equality Act, which was passed. And
in the House. We should be clear about that. It passed the House, and it may face... It might be difficult to get it to pass the Senate in its current form.
Yes. Well, you know, the little wins, a little bit, a little.
Happy. No, yeah, it is. It is. The Equality Act also passed the House in 2019, so it will be good to see it, like, you know, brought to a new political context and to see if it can happen and kind of like fix this remedy of including LGBTQ people into Civil Rights Act protections.
Yeah, the first clip actually that I got was from the Human Rights Campaign, which was from, I think, 2 years ago. And it's just really, I don't know, it's just unbelievable to think that it's been that long. I mean, obviously, like, the history of the plight has been longer than that. But I just, you know, you think with how things are changing so rapidly that basic human rights for all Americans would be at least written down, at least enshrined somewhere, you know. So after that, we did hear a little bit about the $15 an hour from Bernie about why it is good and how the Fed can recuperate from that and how it's done so in the past. And then unfortunately we did hear a piece about how the $15 an hour is not going to enter, has been taken out of the COVID relief bill. We heard a little bit of a breakdown of possible timeline and what the monetary funds would look like for Americans, or I guess all people, for the stimulus bill.
I heard a weird, I heard what sounded like a strange conflation that didn't make sense to me. They were talking about the importance of getting the raising the minimum wage passed before unemployment benefits run out. And it's like for people who don't have a job, they aren't getting a wage. Was it that they then went on to talk about the unemployment extension in the bill, and that's what made the timeline relevant? Okay.
Yeah, well, two of them are tied up together, is my understanding.
So it's all been put together, which is on the Republican side of the aisle has been a thing that they are mentioning, and often a lot of times, which there's a lot of, and I direct quote, useless things, because these bills, you know, these things, they come with a lot of stuff with them. I remember months ago, I think AOC was talking about how they gave them like a 5,000 or 500 page bill to read, and they only had like, I don't know, a couple of hours to read it. So these things can be pretty jam packed. So there is a lot of like moving parts to it. And unfortunately, the $15 an hour option had to be cut from it. And then lastly, we heard about the new detention center for immigrant children that the Biden administration has built or is putting into use for, as they are calling, a shelter. But I think our crowd is cerebral enough to figure out that that's probably not what it is, and that they have families, and that they should probably be with them and not away from them in a shelter-like or jail-like setting. And those are pretty much the highlights from the gap highlights from the Biden administration's actions. And Althea, I think you have a couple of things you want to mention about it, or any thoughts?
Well, I was just thinking, I have thoughts about all of it, but especially with I think that they're, in the sense that one can be sympathetic to the administration, I think they were handed a lot of crises, and they made a lot of commitments that they were like, oh yeah, right away, we'll fix them, we'll get rid of it, everything will be fine, you know, and I think that that is like a kind of standard that is not necessarily, like, it's not possible to be like, snap your fingers and overnight all of these major ills are changed, right? But also, like, it's frustrating when you see, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be upset by this, you know, detention center for children being opened under this administration, but it doesn't address the root of the problem, which is, like, the policy and the way that immigration is working in this country right now, period. Like, that's the problem. The problem isn't that they don't have a soccer field, as they mentioned in the story. So I feel like that's frustrating. I think it's also, I mean, how could you not be frustrated that we don't have like relief yet, and that the only thing that really gives any kind of insurance that it will happen is that unemployment benefits have a time limit. Like March 14th is as much time as was bought in the last time that's how much leeway was bargained for, and that we couldn't get that done sooner, you know, because we're not rid of COVID yet.
Right. I mean, it seems like the vaccinations are definitely being administered, and I know that just opened up another space that, I forgot where it is, but it's another pharmacy that's also going to have COVID shots.
I think
available.
Walgreens.
Yeah, it was like Walgreens or CVS or something. It was very surprising.
In the Oregonian this morning, the governor is going to announce that people 45 and older with pre-existing conditions can start getting the vaccine at the end of March. Which is cool, but also, like, you know, senior citizens have been on the books now. You know, like, they've been allowed to get it for a few weeks now and have just faced major infrastructure problems in terms of, like, being able to find one and the website crashing and,
I'm going to use that as a segue to pivot back, make that connection. Like, being allowed to do something doesn't make much of a difference if it's still impossible to actually do it.
That's a good point.
And I'm going to tie that back to the 15 an hour. If you can't afford to avail yourself of rights and freedoms and actually exercise those rights and freedoms and actually carry out the duties and responsibilities that come with those rights and freedoms, what good are they?
Well, and that, if you want to, if we're pivoting around, we can pivot back to the Equality Act and say, you know, what's good of if you can get married, but then your landlord or your boss can fire you for getting married with someone of the same sex? Like, that makes no sense. Like, you know, there's the lack of, I don't know if it's the lack of, like, because enforcement isn't the way, right? But there needs to be some sort of, like, what's the point of being able to, like you said, what's the point of having the vaccines if the people don't know how to get to them, you know? And I think that a lot of times it falls onto, like, grassroots orgs and nonprofits to kind of, like, bridge that gap between, you know, the feds and the communities. And, but it's like, so, you know, we elect these people to be, you know, in government. So why is it such a big disconnect? You know, why it's like, here is a plate with food, but I'm going to put, like, tape over your mouth and tie your hands down so you can't eat anything. So you're just looking at it. And it's not fair. It's not even a half-baked idea. It's a quarter-baked idea. It's like, here, I'm going to give you something so you don't complain, but not actually give it to you. And it's pretty heartbreaking how, you know, these things have real life consequences from, you know, like you were saying, if the elderly are able to get vaccinated but don't know either how to use the technology to figure out how to get to these places or where they're at, you know, that's putting a life in danger, you know?
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But alas, things are moving, you know.
Things are moving. Okay, yeah, we can have a little crumb of positivity as a treat.
A little crumb of positivity as a treat. I love that. Thank you so much, Althea.
Push the Equality Act through the Senate, and can we get some stimulus in here, if you don't mind?
Yes, we'll see about that stimulus. Like they said in the actuality, it was a $1,400 stimulus and about $350 billion in AIDS. And I hope that that also includes, I'm sure that it also includes, not COVID literacy, but, you know, building infrastructure around the COVID pandemic, whether it's, you know, building spaces where people can get vaccinated or, like we were just saying, you know, funds to be able to bridge the gap between the community and the local authorities to just kind of get everyone on the same page, or at least be able to give them the ways of, I mean, shuttling, you know, it's simple. It can be simple as that, but we will see. At least there's some money being, you know, the coin purses are opening up a little bit, but we'll see, I guess, later today with all the dates and what we are going to be getting. Congress is right now voting on the stimulus and the COVID the COVID relief bill. So hopefully we'll have some good news by next week.
Nice.
And also a little bit of money in our pockets too, hopefully.
Yeah. $1,400, here we come.
Here we go.
Let's go for it, guys. Tammy Sonia, how do we... go ahead, please.
I would say, let's say the internet is not happy with Joe Biden right now.
No.
The memes are telling a whole different story.
The memes can be a little vicious, you know?
The memes are very vicious, yeah.
Memes are like, I want to create an idiom, you know, that one that's like, oh, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. It's like, the way to understand how the people really feel is through the memes.
Exactly.
Like that. The memes are the gut of society. You know what? I'll work on it. I'll come back to you guys with what I've decided the meme idiom
is. Shadow work figured out.
Yeah. My underlying drive to create a good idiom about this. What do you think about going into our second half? Are we ready for that?
That sounds good to me. I guess we'll put on a little music. To do a smooth transition to our second part. In case people are just tuning in, you are listening to The Gap here on KBOO Portland. I am Tammy. On the line with me is the lovely Althea and Sonia. Here's a little musical break, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Exchanging glances, wondering in the night, what were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through. Something in your eyes was so inviting. Something in your smile was so exciting. Something in my heart told me I must have. In the night, up to the moment when we said our first hello, little did we know, love was just a glance away, a warm embracing dance away, and ever since that night, we've been together, lovers at first sight, in love forever, it turned out so right. Strangers in the night.
This is KBOO Portland, and we are The Gap. Cake with Strangers in the Night with a beautiful cover, a Frank Sinatra cover. And we are moving on to our part two of the program. Althea, would you like to do a little intro?
Oh, I would be delighted. So, okay, let me set the stage here. It's me and it's Tammy, and we're trying to figure out what is it that we, you know, what are the things that are happening in the world right now that we want to talk about. And it seems like persistence, maybe in the past, like, 12 months more than in years past, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention. It seems like, you know, every week there's some kind of celebrity or personality or somebody who's somebody who is getting raked across the coals on the internet for doing something that's bad or saying something bad.
Cancel culture.
Well, see, I'm of two minds about cancel culture, which I've expressed on the show before, you know, which is, hey, sometimes it's a powerful tool for voices that otherwise wouldn't be heard to be heard. But also, sometimes, do we have a cultural, you know, situation where people can learn from their mistakes and, like, have redemption? Or is everyone, are we all, you know, human or whatever? But so I don't like to say that cancel culture, all of it is bad and evil and we hate all of it. But I think especially, you know, since the panorama started, it's clear that, you know, the idea of celebrity, of famous people, like, it's not a meritocracy. Like, it's not the best and, you know, most pure-hearted and most deserving people who end up with fame and influence, you know? And it isn't to say that, like, we shouldn't hold them to account, but maybe our role models and people that we look up to shouldn't be celebrities. You know, they're famous. They immediately live a way different life than the majority of people. So that kind of, like, led me to think about what could be the question, like, because we like to ask a question on the show to the audience to hear from our community. And I was, you know, wanting to know, who was, like, a non-celebrity role model that you looked up to when you were younger? Who was a non-celebrity role model you had growing up, and what made you look up to them? So we're going to dig into that a little bit. If you want to join the conversation, you can. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Now, how did that strike you?
You did, and no fictional characters from books or movies. We talked about this already, and some of them have been canceled through our lifetime. So no fictitious famous characters either. That's a really beautiful question because it makes you look inwardly, and I love when Elsie posed this question. Who's someone you look up to that isn't a celebrity? I would love to hear from people. Again, that number is 503-231-8187. See, I did it right this time.
Yeah, I was waiting with bated breath to see you stick the landing, and you did.
Althea, do you have I'm sure you have someone that you look up to who isn't a celebrity. Would you like to share yours?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that I have, you know, admired and aspired to be like. But I think, like, the first one that I can really remember was my second and third grade teacher, Miss Grady and later Mrs. Saltzman. I thought she was, like, so cool and so smart and so kind. And when I was younger, I really wanted to be a teacher. I was like, I got my life all planned out. First, I'm going to be a teacher. Then I'm going to be a writer. Then I'm going to be a librarian. I was ready to have three careers at the age of, like, seven. I couldn't pick between them. But my second grade
teacher.
Well,
being a millennial, good for you. You had some foresight.
I was ready, fundamentally, to do some career shifts.
Never retire and work 500 different jobs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't know at that time. Well, those are all, you know, complicated things. Library science, I would have to go to school for some time, but it seemed fun. I loved books as a kid. And my favorite thing about her class was we would have, like, a read-aloud time, and it wouldn't be, like, one-off book. Like, it would be, like, a novel that, like, the whole class, we were all reading together. We would all talk about it, and we would, like, act it out on the playground and stuff. Like, I loved that class.
That's
what about
lovely.
You?
That's funny. It would have to be a teacher as well, a professor from college, Mr. Tango. And he was, what did he do? He was, he was a mental health professional, and he was working on a PhD to teach history to children through video games. So, and he did scuba dive. He had a underwater scuba dive wedding, and he was like, I don't know, he was just so inspiring, and he was a former Marine, and I was in Gateway to College, and people in Oregon are pretty familiar with it, but it's a program where high schoolers leave high school, and then they start college at a young age and do college and high school credits together. And so, obviously, I was a youngster, and I didn't know my left foot from my right foot, and his whole thing was to just get us acclimated to adulthood, which... like, was such a... I wasn't even ready to you know, understand his wisdom at that point, but now I definitely think about it, and I'm like, wow, that... like, I still... there's a lot of things that I live by that he had said to me. And also, he was a, you know, an African-American man, a teacher that... and he was the only Black teacher that I had in college, and it felt really good, and I know that it wasn't just me. It was our whole cohort was just very, very fond of Mr. Tango, and the things that he taught us, we still talk about it now. And so we'd love to hear from other people about the people that they look up to who were not celebrities, and just kind of chat about it. 503-231-8187. And I think that we have someone on the line right now.
Linda, go ahead.
Good morning. Hi, this is Linda. Good morning. Thanks for the question. I didn't even know that I was waiting to answer. But I would put my mom. I'm going to get cryy, so forgive me. But my mom, she died in 83, but she worked for 25 years for what was called welfare and then Children's Services Committee and all of that. And she demonstrated and raised me to believe that everybody deserved a helping hand, and that sometimes people needed it more than once, and that that's what humans should do for each other, just by the weight of us being human beings, that we all deserve it. And she would stand up for people when they were being hurt or wronged. They used to do what was called night raids here in Portland, in Albina, against primarily black people who were on welfare, and they would go in, support enforcement would go in with guns and terrify the families and the children. And my mom was one with, I'm sure, quite a few others who fought that and fought that hard internally to welfare. And when somebody, let me think of some other examples, but there are examples of personal, well, when the Black Panthers were being, attacked and murdered all over, and down in Eugene, they were being attacked, and I asked my mother for money for court, and she had no money. She had three kids in college, and she was a social worker. You don't make crap as a social worker in Oregon, I can promise you. And she gave me $25, which I look back now and realize how much that was in 1967. And she told me, she always believed, she was anti-racist from as long as I can remember, talking to us about Mahalia Jackson, how that beautiful voice was not allowed to come in the front door. She just had real integrity and, would go to bat. I remember maybe it was late 70s, a friend of hers who was a very good social worker and was going to be the temporary head of the agency for the state. A rumor started going around. It wasn't untrue that she was gay, but in that day, it was being used to try to destroy her. And I remember my mom took a very strong stand internally and externally about that, and wrote, a strong letter of support for her as the head of the welfare department. So all of those things make her, I feel like, just the kind of person we need today. So that's my story.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you so much for sharing. That's really nice. I think to be able to see what a person does is one thing, but to be able to see how they treat their family, especially when it's you, it really elevates it. And how they say, walk the walk and talk the talk,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to give us your thoughts about who was, a non-celebrity role model you had growing up, give us a call, 503-231-8187. We would love to hear from you. Yeah, I think that it's interesting to think about, comparing a celebrity role model to who is, necessarily one-dimensional, It's like, I don't actually know them.
That's very true.
Versus, having someone in your life and getting to see those different dimensions and how, like Linda mentioned, integrity can be upheld in different arenas rather than, just a public face.
Yeah, you the one-dimensional part is really interesting. And now, or I guess, throughout our time and with pop culture and all, the second that someone either does something wrong or not even does something wrong, when you find out someone's position about something or things that they've done in the past, I feel like it's more shocking because you have this one-dimensional perception of them that anything that doesn't fit that is just is kind of shocking and almost appalling. But I mean, you know, like you said, you don't know them. You just know one tiny part of them that is airbrushed and practiced and repeated and publicist, and you know, like there's a whole industry behind a person's persona. So when you're able to have that real perception, that real connection, a real perception to see, you know, like Linda was saying, oh, my mother is doing all these great things for the community, but then when she comes home, she keeps it up. You know, it's not something you turn on and turn off. It's something that you are or that you are not. And so, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to just be family. It can be neighbors. It can be, you know, like we were saying, teachers. It can be, I don't know, just someone that you see working every day, and you just really appreciate their work ethics and how they're building a better day for you or for your community or just doing it. You know, sometimes just showing up is all a person can do. And when we know that person and that what we think that's their maximum capacity, you know, we know to respect that. But we can't know anything about anyone when we have a one-dimensional, you know, perception of them. So again, like Althea said, we'd love to hear from you, the listener, about who was your role model growing up. 503-231-8187.
It's interesting to think about, and maybe folks of older generations can give better perspective on this than I can, but the way that I think like 90s paparazzi culture and then social media has transformed in some ways expectations of famous people, you know, and I think it's that kind of expecting that because you follow them on social media, that means that you have a sort of personal link to them, which is actually parasocial in most contexts. Like, you're not actually their friend. You just think that they're pretty and they act good in movies and they're funny in their, you know, press junket interviews. That doesn't mean that you, like, know them through and through. And I mean no, like, you know, offense to all of the fans out there who will consume every drop of culture or every drop of information that their favorite celebrity will give them. But there's a difference between, in terms of like understanding somebody's integrity and who they are, you know, in front of a camera versus in their real life. We got another caller on the line. Debbie, how you doing?
Hey, Debbie.
Hello, Debbie.
Debbie, you're live.
Debbie, can you hear us?
Pardon me? I'm back, and this is Debbie.
Hey.
Hi, Debbie. How's
it going?
Well, hey, are you the kids who are on radio right now on KBOO?
Sure are.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, I made some notes, and I'm prepared to tell. I think this is a fantastic question because any person who is breathing is going to be able to think in the past and also in the present. Who are my personality inspirations, you know?
Yeah,
totally. Do you have thoughts on that, Debbie? Who is that for you?
Pardon me?
Who is that for you?
Oh, well, when I was very young, probably like 2 and 3 years old, of course, the family unit, my father was away working, but the family unit in the, you know, day by day at home was my mother and my older sister, 1 year older than me, and me. And so I was, of course, the bottom of the totem pole, and I'm very kinfin, you know, when you put on a coat or sweater, sometimes your arm kind of gets stuck, so it doesn't go in. correctly. And this even happens to me now. And when that is a struggle and you're being prevented to have success, to get your arm in the coat, you know, or the sweater. And I'm pretty sure that my older sister got a lot of really good entertainment about restraining. It's being restrained. It's being sort of tied up. And I'm sure I was just a terror, you know. And so I'm imagined, since they were all alone, you know, my mother and my sister were unsupervised, and I believe they did things that restrained me, where I was tied up, because I still, when I can't get my arm in the coat, I'm crazy. It just is. I get a flash of craziness, and I'm just really certain that happened. But when I got older, when I was in high school, I looked to my sister because she had a real clear dream to become a doctor. She wanted to be a doctor. So we'd one time I was out on the bicycle before school, way, you know, like 6 o'clock, just driving around on my bicycle, and I found a raccoon that was dead on the road. And so I feel like I probably didn't touch it, but I had a basket on my bicycle, and so I don't know how I got that thing into the basket on the basket. I mean, it levitated, but anyway, I brought home that roadkill raccoon and gave it to my sister. Of course, she wanted to be a doctor, so you have to know how to, you know, deal with dead bodies and how to dissect. And so I recall we put it in the freezer for a good long time, but
that's a really interesting
story.
Happened. I'm just gonna go ahead and ask you if you could just land that plane onto who is a non-celebrity person that has inspired you in your youth, and if you don't have one, that's fine. You can just move on to the next caller.
Well, here's another one that in reading the books, I was reading all kinds of books about potters around the world, just everybody, and some of it was really a good documentation right down to what happens moment by moment in a day of a potter's life. And I was in my first 3 years of Portland State doing pottery and ceramic chemistry, geology. And so one of my inspirations was Michael Carter. He was a potter who went from England and was assigned to a village in Africa called Abuja, and it was on the coastline of a country in Africa. And he there just sort of arrived. He worked with the local clay. He worked with the local people, and he just was so humble and just being a potter. I mean, it wasn't a lot of there was no like important people. He was just a regular potter there, thrashing around, making things. And it and probably the travel component, and that he was in a foreign country, just a regular potter, but didn't have like elevated status of being some kind of professor or something. There was no school. It was just Potter's here. Potter's work. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Really appreciate that.
Yeah, giving us your thoughts on that. If there are other folks out there that want to give us their thoughts on the question of who was a non-celebrity role model that you had growing up, give us a call. We got probably time for a few more. 501-8187. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, you know, artists are even if, when they don't have celebrity following, when they just when you just make something, you know, just creativity is it touches worlds. You know, it can really transform a person's feel, a person's everything. And while I think, you know, even inanimate objects can provoke a type of inspiration, you know? So a beautiful piece of art, it really can. I really thank you, Debbie, for that mention and mentioning art in itself. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think even just like, you know, not that, you know, whoever your role model has to be somebody that you know interpersonally, but just like artists especially, you can just see it's like, wow, I get to see your expression. You know, I don't even have to know you to see, you know, what you can create, what's in your brain. I think that's super cool. That number, can I give the number one more time? And then I would love
please
to hear what
do,
you have
yeah.
to say. Yeah, give us a call, 503-231-8187. If you would like to share about a non-celebrity role model that you had growing up, we would love to hear from you. We've been thinking about some of our own.
Yes, and again, that number is 503-231-8187. Your non-celebrity inspiration growing up, who you looked up to. Interesting that we are hearing a lot about, we heard so far about three teachers and one family member. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Teachers have a serious influence on folks. That's years later, we're still thinking about you.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if teachers are ever inspired by children or by their pupils, you know?
Yeah, I wonder. Could speak to that, but maybe somebody else can.
There's kids out there, too. The way that, you know, especially now with the pandemic, the way that they're seeing things is, you know, very different than the way that we're seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's 503-231-8187.
I have
your voice on the air. We'd love to hear your point of view, your thoughts. Share them with
us. You got one, Sonia?
I have five or six teachers. A couple from elementary school and a couple from the first time I went to college. But let's see what this person has to say. Hold on.
Okay. No worries. But yeah, I can... So much of, like, thinking about childhood is, like, tracing the teachers that I had and what was special and interesting about them. I would say all of my elementary teachers were awesome.
Some of us spent more time with our teachers than we did with our parents, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Working families and stuff, yeah, definitely. And Sonia, whenever you are ready, we are thrilled to have another person on to give us their inspiration growing up.
Bradley, you ready?
Yeah.
You're live.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, Bradley, how are you doing?
Good. Today's a good day. It's a beautiful sunny day today. And I think, I was going to call in and I was going to say, well, if writers would count, and so then I was just going to say, like, either Bertrand Russell or Baudrillard. But then that last lady makes me think that you guys now are my heroes, because it reminded me of old Portland, old cable radio, where everyone can call in and you would give her the dignity, or you had the dignity to let her speak, and that was wonderful. So you guys are my heroes now, so I just wanted to put that out there.
Thanks, Bradley. Appreciate it.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Bradley.
Well, I'll see you. We weren't even fishing for compliments, but look
at that. Oh, my God. I'm going to ride that high the rest of the day. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to take that into month 19 of 2020. Thank
you.
You don't tell me anything now.
Now, one of my jobs here is to log when the calls come. like when they go on hold to wait their turn, when they come on and when they go off. Bradley called, got on the air, made our day, and left all in less than a minute. See the impact you can have, people, and how quickly and how easily you can change somebody's day.
Yeah. Well, Sonia, I want to hear about your inspirations. We got like a minute left.
Okay, well, there's Marian Patterson and Michael Ivanitsky. These were people who taught me how to use a camera and develop film at Foothill Community College in the mid-90s, because in mid-90s, we were still using film. There was Beverly Elkins, my fourth grade teacher, who told us on the first day of school that she eats cold raw fish for breakfast and works out on a tire, so she's extra crabby and grouchy, so you better watch out. And who else did I say? I said I had a couple... teachers. Oh, and I think that people who work with children are often inspired by children, at least in the aggregate, if not any particular one. I remember when I was a counselor at a summer camp, we were on our way for crackers and juice, and you know, coming back from visiting the animal pens, because this was on a farm, he comes like kind of trotting up ahead of the rest of the group, and just takes my hand, looks up in the face like, I wish I had a parent who was like you. And it's like my heart melted and broke at the same time. And you think like the old saying, 100 years from now, the world might be better. The world can be a better place because I was important in the life of a child.
Oh, that's great. Beautiful. What a wonderful note to end on.
Yes. Thank you for that, Sonia. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This has been The Gap. I'm Tammy with Althea and Sonia, keeping it real, flipping the script. Have a fantastic weekend. Thank you, everyone, so much.
Bye.